Welcome to this IWA podcast. Today, we bring you the live recording of the keynote speech given at our 2025 annual general meeting, which took place on the 25th of September. This wide-ranging and high-level speech was given by Mick Antoniff, long-standing Senedd member for Pontypridd and former Council General for Wales. At the meeting, Mick was also awarded an honorary life fellowship at the IWA. This speech is entitled Democracy at a Precipice: The Challenges Facing Our Democracy and Devolution. In it, Mick discusses his experience in Welsh Government and his arguments for the need for comprehensive reform to Wales's constitutional settlement. We hope you enjoy it.
I've entitled the contribution I'm going to make today, Democracy at a Precipice: The Challenges Facing Our Democracy and Devolution. So firstly, thank you for inviting me today and to give me the opportunity to build and to expand upon the opinion piece I wrote for the IWA on the constitutional challenges facing Wales and the UK earlier this year. I'm encouraged that the article received a lot of interest because there are those for whom any mention of constitutional reform sets their eyes rolling and extracts comments which I've heard just so many times from some leading politicians and others, that people aren't interested in the constitution, not a bread and butter issue. We've got to sort out the cost of living crisis first, and that it basically is just not important. Well, I fundamentally disagree. They either misunderstand what the constitution is and its importance, or it is an obfuscation to resist change and the decentralization of power. It is at our peril that we neglect the importance of the constitutional arrangements that govern our economic and social well-being, but also our political and civic stability and hegemony. Some of the disturbing recent events around the country that we've all witnessed are, I believe, testimony to the growing and dangerous civic instability. So in order to explain some of my thoughts, I have to preface with a political narrative, and I'll try and make it non-partisan, because these are comments I think that are pertinent to all political parties that value our democracy and the rule of law. The Constitution is the foundation of our democracy. It is the compact, written and unwritten, developed over centuries with the people of the nations of the United Kingdom. It is developed through conquest, oppression, civil war, protest and insurrection, through common law, wisdom and statute, and through compromise and pragmatism. Overall, it's not bad, but it can never be static because it needs to continually modernise and adapt if it is to sustain political and democratic stability and consensus as society and the world changes economically, socially and politically. Devolution is part of that process of change and response. It is about the decentralisation of power, the empowerment of people and communities, but it still has a long way to go. Leading up to the last set of elections, I was working with us developing a new approach to reform, and we entitled the papers we produced Radical Federalism. And in those papers and discussions, we challenged the then status quo of the UK government and opened the door for a debate in Wales on the constitutional future of Wales and the United Kingdom. It contributed to the establishment post-election of the Independent Commission on the Constitutional Future of Wales, jointly chaired by Professor Laura McAllister and Dr. Rowan Williams. And the purpose of the commission was to engage as widely as possible with the people of Wales and to bring forward evidence-based recommendations. The commission was reflective of the political makeup of Wales and engaged very high-level expertise. It produced recommendations which built upon previous commissions and contemporaneous evidence, as well as substantial civic engagement. So it's therefore disappointing, and if I may say, insulting to Wales, that the previous government, perhaps not unexpectedly, gave such scant consideration to its findings. I say not unexpected because the last government, in all its chaos, had become an increasingly entrenched, muscular unionist government, which was not prepared to entertain any discussion on reform, on further reform, whatever the merit. Now, as a Welsh Labour member for 52 years now, I'm proud of the reforms achieved since the 1970s. Through the failed 1979 referendum, which I remember well when I served as president of the National Union of Students Wales, becoming part of the then campaigning Wales for the Assembly Committee, whose membership included the titanic Welsh politician Alistair Morgan and others such as the late Barry Jones, Raymond Williams, John Osmond, and others. But in the dying days of the Callaghan government, the referendum was perhaps doomed to failure, and fail it certainly did. But in Westminster, there nevertheless remained a strong parliamentary voice for Wales post-referendum and into the dark days of the 1980s. Members of Parliament such as John Morris, Paul Flynn, Roger Morgan, Julie Morgan, Peter Hain, Dafydd Ellis Thomas, late Dafydd Ellis Thomas, council leaders, church leaders, and trade union leaders, the Wales TUC, and at UK levels, UK level, figures such as Labour Party leader John Smith, who sadly never lived to see the fulfilment of the devolution project that he was so committed to. But it led to, eventually to the 1997 referendum in the first year of the new Labour government and the establishment of the National Assembly for Wales just over 2 years later in 1999. And then beyond, it led to the 2006 Government of Wales Act, which was groundbreaking and which paved the way for the creation of a Senedd with primary legislative powers, later built upon by the 2014 and the 2017 Wales Acts. It is therefore of historic regret that not only have we never had a full and proper response to the Commission findings and the recommendations from the last government, the last UK government, but that we have yet to receive any substantive engagement or detailed response from the current government. And added to this, we now have the report produced by former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, A New Britain, Renewing Our Democracy and Rebuilding Our Economy, commissioned by the Labour Party, commissioned for the Labour Party by Sir Keir Starmer. I consider this to be one of the most important constitutional reports produced in recent decades. It sets the parameters and reasons for reform. It outlines the principles on which the need for change is based, and it recognises the serious challenges facing our democracy. It is a roadmap for change. I'll outline some of these in a minute, but make a few comments first of all. Our democracy, I believe, is at a precipice because it is dependent on a deteriorating civic mandate. During my terms as Council General and Minister for the Constitution, I took two pieces of important legislation through, one on Senedd reform and the other on electoral reform, through the Senedd, and during the debates, I used the term democratic health. I'm glad to see that the phrase is in much more common usage now, alongside well-being, equality, diversity, fairness, justice. It is as important, if not more so, than all of these measures by which we judge society and have sadly for so many years been neglected. Our representative institutions have been gradually losing that mandate, and this has opened the door to disengagement, anger, and frustration, and to the extremist far right, boosted and buoyed by social media, which now provides a global platform to populist conspiracies, propaganda, incitement, and disinformation. The ability to stir, mobilise, as we have seen with the debate and campaigns around immigration, opened the door to a level of overt racism and hatred, which I have never before experienced, and an anger against politicians, government, distrust of elected government, the judiciary, and the rule of law. Now, I was, of course, pleased to see the change of government as a result of the 2024 general election, a tremendous victory for the Labour Party. But that victory also exposed the growing extent of our own constitutional and electoral fragmentation and deterioration. A great victory, but only because of the first-past-the-post electoral system. An outdated and undemocratic system where the government won two-thirds of the seats with one-third of the votes, with 40% of the registered electorate not voting and millions not even being on the electoral register, of which there's an estimated 400,000 in Wales alone, according to the Electoral Commission. In seven of Wales's 32 constituencies, half or less than half who were registered to vote actually voted, with only 43% of the registered voters voting in an Eireann Bevans former constituency of Bleiner Gwent. In Rhondda, 48%, and in many more, including my own constituency of Pontypridd, it was just over 50%. Of the new 16-plus voters, only half registered to vote, and only half of those actually voted. So I think we should all be shocked, and I think we should all be very worried by this. Just look at some of those seats. Aberavon, Maesteg, 49.37% turnout. Bleiner Gwent and Rumney, as I've said, 43% turnout. Merthyr Tydfil and Aberdare, 47.43% turnout. Neath and Swansea East, 52%. Newport East, 50%. Pontypridd, 52%. Rhondda and Ogmore, 48%. Swansea West, 48%. Torvine, 50%. Some of our most traditionally working class former mining constituencies, where the majority of the population are now no longer participating in civic elections. The warning signs are all there. In his report, Gordon Brown identifies some of the causes that underlie this dramatic loss of trust. Now, I quote from the report because his comments are, I believe, so powerful. So I quote, "At the root of this failure is not just an outdated neoliberal economic dogma, but also an unreformed, over-centralised way of governing that leaves millions of people complaining that they are neglected, ignored and invisible, all too often left to feel as though they are treated as second-class citizens in their own country. Against this backdrop, against this background, it is hardly surprising trust in British politicians has declined rapidly over the last decade. According to detailed research by IPPR, over 60% of people in the UK now think that British politicians are merely out for themselves. Only 5% believe that politicians are trying to do their best for their country. When it comes to telling British people the truth, politicians and government ministers are now trusted by only 12% of British people, a figure that is less than any other profession polled, including advertising executives, estate agents, and bankers. The problem is the hostile sentiment towards government at the centre." He continues, "A clear majority, more than 50% of adults in all places and supporters of all parties, commonly believe it doesn't matter who you vote for. Nothing will ever really change in Britain. Even more, a figure consistently above 60% believe that Britain has a ruling class who will always rule the country no matter what happens. In summary, a majority of the people in our country have lost or are losing confidence in our political system and governance. It is apparent to most observers that the UK government is now, by and large, discarding most of the report for the foreseeable future. And there is little overt enthusiasm for radical reform. Although the report was welcomed by Labour's National Executive Committee and endorsed by Labour's Welsh Conference, there has been minimal debate. Its importance has been largely ignored and pushed into the political long grass, a mistake, in my view, of historic proportions, and one that I believe will have adverse consequences. Some devolution of power to the regions of England, as proposed in the Gordon Brown report, is underway, long overdue, and progress which I do very much welcome. Pressure from regional mayors and the determined work of the recent Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner are reflected in the English devolution white paper. And I quote Angela Rayner's introduction to that paper, because I think that is also quite powerful. She says, "If we are going to build an economy that works for everyone, we need nothing less than a completely new way of governing, a generational project of determined devolution. because the Westminster system is part of the problem. Whitehall is full of layers of governance and bureaucracy, controlled and micromanaged from the centre. To truly get growth in every corner of the country and to put more money into people's pockets, we must rewire England and end the hoarding in Whitehall by devolving power and money from central government to those with skin in the game. England is one of the most centralised countries in the developed world. Those statements are just as relevant to Wales and the rest of the United Kingdom. And welcome though they are, the proposals are nevertheless cautious and conditional. The move towards greater devolution in England is positive, but on its own and out of context with the rest of the UK, it does nothing to resolve the deeper problems identified in the Brown Report, let alone embrace its principles and recommendations. The Brown Report proposes a new constitutional settlement. It says the political, social, and economic purposes of the UK as a union of nations, which the overwhelming majority of people in the country already accept, should be laid out in a new constitutional statute, guiding how political power should be shared within it. Since the general election, progress on further Welsh devolution has been virtually non-existent. At the moment, it is difficult to see that anything of consequence has changed. If anything, it has deteriorated. A lot of talk and superficial goodwill, but little substance, and at best a lethargic and minimalist commitment to reform. Gordon Brown makes the point that there is no reason why Wales should not have the same powers as Scotland, if that is the wish of the people of Wales. Yet it is a great political irony that in Westminster, the dysfunction of the asymmetrical devolution model attracts so much complacent disinterest. The defence in Westminster of the England and Wales justice system, an outdated post-Victorian model that is failing in just about every respect due to the lack of funding and outdated concepts of the operation and administration of justice, is bizarre. And it reflects an almost colonial mentality. In May 2022, Jane Hutt, Minister for Social Justice, and myself jointly published a detailed set of proposals for justice reform, highlighting how it was not only necessary but essential to building a 21st century justice system, a move towards dispute resolution, drug and alcohol courts, family reform, youth justice, and probation devolution, all had at their core the recognition that justice is about resolving disputes and resolving many of the issues which are rooted in social and economic inequality and poverty, and an integral part of the devolved Welsh responsibilities. The last UK government ignored the report despite the overwhelming support for reform in Wales from all sectors of the Welsh justice community, particularly youth justice and probation, which the Brown Report recommended as the starting point for the devolution of justice. To date, I've still seen no comprehensive response, and this sadly reflects the retrospective and introverted constitutional conservatism that permeates across Westminster politics. In his book, In Place of Fear, Ira Bevan asked, where does power lie and how can it be attained by the workers? And he went on to say, it was no abstract question for us. The circumstances of our lives made it a burning, luminous mark of interrogation. Where was power and which the road to it? The Gordon Brown Report, I think, also addresses this topic and this question. And he goes on to say, the UK is at a constitutional moment and needs change, comparable to the important shifts in power in the 19th and 20th centuries that widened the franchised, reformed parliament, or more recently introduced devolution. Our economy is faltering. Our democracy has lost the trust of its people who have repeatedly voted for change. 17.4 million people voted for Brexit in 2016. And 1.6 million in Scotland voted to leave the UK in 2014. But if we are to transform our country, we must change not just who governs us, but how we are governed. And he goes on to say, constitutions establish the framework of government in a country, but they also serve social and economic objectives, setting out the purpose and direction of a country and the values and principles recognized by the people and the institutions of government. Now, in my limited time tonight, there are many important issues which I haven't time to refer to. I would have liked to talk more about inequality and poverty, which I believe is at the heart of our political crisis and underpins much of the feeling and resentment and anger that emerged during the Brexit referendum, and which is now a catalyst for political parties on the far right. As the Brown Report states, the shocking economic imbalance between the different parts of the United Kingdom is at the heart of why we are failing to reach our country's economic potential. It is a significant cause also of deep distrust in Westminster, which people all across the country feel. It is our view that this economic imbalance itself is exacerbated by the gross over-centralisation of the UK state, a system of government where power and control are hoarded by a few people in Whitehall and Westminster. This over-centralisation of power poisons almost every aspect of our political system. It bedevils the relationship between central government and the devolved institutions of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, with Whitehall seemingly unable to respect their separate authority or work coherently to improve cooperation in areas of shared interest. And at the root of this failure is not just an outdated neoliberal economic dogma, but also an unreformed, over-centralised way of governing that leaves millions of people complaining they are neglected, ignored and invisible, all too often left to feel as though they are treated as second-class citizens in their own country. I'll concentrate now on some of the reforms I think are most immediately important in respect of devolution of Westminster, but this is a debate that could go on much, much longer if you gave me the latitude to do so, which you haven't. We have devolution in so many of the important areas that impact on the lives and well-being of Welsh citizens, housing, education, health, to name a few. But in many of these, we have devolution of process and policy, but invariably tied to a millstone of financial decisions that are taken at UK level. So for health, yes, fully devolved, but we are dependent in our block grant for the funding that is decided for health in England by the UK government. If the UK government decides on a 2% increase as necessary for NHS England, Wales gets 2%. If in England they decide upon a 3% wage increase, Wales gets a 3% consequential. Sometimes. If we want to do otherwise, we have to divert from other sources, such as education, environment, business, and so on. Political decisions at Westminster still irrationally determine the political choices available and necessary to devolve government. And there are many other examples. We do not have the needs-based system that Wales and indeed the regions of England require if we are to tackle the diversity of poverty, demography, and inequality in our society. The Barnett formula is indeed a redistributive formula, but it is outdated and it desperately needs reform. We would also benefit from a cultural change in the Treasury at Westminster as to how it understands and engages with devolved government. We recently heard a UK government Treasury minister, who has now risen even further, suggesting that Wales should be grateful for what it gets, as though we are some sort of colonial beneficiary rather than part of the United Kingdom. Ministers frequently refer to Wales getting 20p extra for every pound spent in England. This is a distortion and represents an almost colonial approach to Welsh funding. It is also a misrepresentation of a bigger picture. Wales gets a Barnett consequential, as do many other parts of England, Northern Ireland and Scotland. Per capita spend varies for the different regions of England, as well as for Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. Wales, in fact, gets a poorer financial settlement than Scotland and Northern Ireland, who do pretty well out of the formula. which is partly why it is so difficult to build consensus for change. There are a number of options. It is not necessarily about replacing Barnett, but about recognizing that it can, at the very least, be improved with a clearer and more open codifications of the rules around comparability, which drives the formula outcomes. It could include a prohibition of the allocation of funds outside Barnett, as occurred during the Theresa May government with Northern Ireland, or the introduction of an independent dispute resolution process, which would go some way to restoring confidence and trust in the process. The need for a new, or at least an improved and more flexible formula, has been soundly argued for the past decade, but such calls have been largely ignored. Devolution also requires a clear delineation of financial and legislative power and responsibility, which brings me to the legislative process and the legal jurisdiction. The Sewell Convention provides that the UK government will not normally legislate in devolved areas of responsibility. However, despite it being entrenched in statute, it is still only a non-justiciable convention, and one that was consistently breached by the last government. In my opinion, it should now be given legislative and justiciable protection, as recommended by the Brown Report. It is no longer acceptable for the commitment to Sewell to be based on the whim of the UK government of the day. Regularly breached during the last government, relations are now much improved, but it is early days. And in any event, there is a need for a proper constitutional footing with legislation, a justiciable constitutional backstop. This now brings me to the issue of intergovernmental relations. Initiated by Theresa May, there is now an intergovernmental and interinstitutional three-tiered framework for government-to-government dealings. Above that, at the base, we have interministerial meetings. Above that is an intergovernmental standing committee, which I from time to time chaired. And then at the highest level, provision for a meeting of First Minister and Prime Minister. Added to this is the creation of a secretariat and the establishment of an as yet untested disputes process. So it was an important step forward, but one that is not yet fully completed. Some progress has been made, but its fundamental flaw that it has no legislative status. It is not underpinned by law and is vulnerable to all the weaknesses that have beset relations to this day. In practice, the UK government appears to be continuing the centralisation of power progressed by the last Conservative government. Funding post-Brexit, such as shared prosperity and levelling up funding, which should come to Wales, has been handed to the Welsh Office, even though it relates to spending in devolved areas. This is a continuation of the policy of the previous UK government, established to bypass devolved government. The Welsh Office and position of Secretary of State for Wales was a 1965 pre-devolution creation. In my opinion, it has served its purpose. Its time has been and gone, and its purpose has been replaced by the establishment of the Welsh Parliament, of the Senedd. Its role is ill-defined, and one that now conflicts with, and I believe undermines the development and operation of the intergovernmental framework. The future of such relations should be governed by government to government, and minister to minister, and first minister to prime minister. And I think one way forward is for a new Constitutional Reform Act. This could also be used to repeal legislation such as the United Kingdom Internal Market Act, imposed by the UK government, which undermines devolution, and the constructive and successful work that was done post-Brexit by the UK and devolved governments to establish devolution respecting common frameworks across all areas relevant to the internal market. Long overdue is the abolition of the outdated, archaic and undemocratic House of Lords and its replacement with a new chamber representing the nations and regions of the UK, which would also act as a constitutional chamber. The proposals so far are merely to remove the hereditary peers and to impose an age limit. If that is the extent of our Westminster reforms, then not much will change. Finally, the establishment of a constitutional convention is long overdue. We must address the outdated concepts of Westminster parliamentary sovereignty and modernise our democracy. Sovereignty comes from the people. We now have four parliaments, each with their own democratic mandates. Sovereignty is clearly now shared, and our constitutional framework must be modernised to reflect this reality. If we want long-term reform, consensus and stability, we must embrace them now. Engage the people of the UK and seek consensus for reform, which will provide long-term stability and prosperity. There is still time for the UK government to be radical, to embrace change, to set out a real Labour vision for the future, to do the things that we all know it needs to do, to rejoin the single market, to introduce electoral reform, to put equality and alleviation of poverty at the top of its agenda, to embrace the political debate necessary to build consensus for the change our society needs for the better. But time is running out.